Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus store owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. Today on the show, I'm joined by Lee Lichtleiter from CameraReadyCosmetics.com, and Lee has a very cool story. He spent a lot of time in the software space, owning non-e-commerce businesses and management. After he got out of those, which we discuss, he went on the search for the perfect business. And I love how he did this because he was incredibly analytical and systematic about what kind of business he was looking for. He had a set of criteria, seven or eight different criteria. He stuck to those. And we talk about how that went. Like, you know, what those criteria are, how long it took him to find a business that met those, and also how the process of buying it, getting it, and taking it over has gone. So very cool story. I appreciate his approach, a lot of wisdom and knowledge that he has. And so hope you get as much out of it as I did. Before we jump in, I want to give a huge thank you to our friends at Klaviyo. Klaviyo, they've been, man, phenomenal sponsors of our event, of the community, of the podcast for years. And I love them. Our community loves them. They're by far the most popular service for automated email marketing in the e-commerce space, and for incredibly good reason. They just have built an product that's better than everyone else's. It's pretty amazing, pretty easy to market when you do that. So their automated email engine and the ability, the framework they give you to create automated flows that are highly personalized based on what your customers have purchased, what they haven't purchased, how much they've bought from you, their lifetime value, how they've interacted, what they've seen on your website. You can create flows that aren't annoying, that are highly relevant, and that convert like crazy for your store with their email engine. And so if you're looking for a great platform for email and SMS as well, check them out. You can get started for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. All right, let's jump into my discussion with Lee. Lee, welcome to the show. I got to kick this off by extending a huge thank you. You have been, man, one of our absolute top members over the last year that's joined up in terms of just diving in and engaging, coming to the event, adding a ton of value. And it's been a real pleasure having you in the community. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it. It's great to be here. I've enjoyed listening to a lot of ECF podcasts, so I'm excited to be part of it.
Hey, well, excited to have you on. And you've got a very cool story that we're going to dive into in just a minute here, but maybe a little background. So you have background in kind of tech and software as a service, SaaS, right?
Yeah, that's correct. My career is kind of reflective of that old phrase where men plan and God laughs, where I actually planned to be a doctor in college, and then I got interested in computers. I combined them and got degrees in computer engineering and biology with a plan on going into bioengineering. And along the way, I took a left turn and started programming and started working kind of in big corporate America. And my career ran in a completely different direction. So I spent early part of my career in software development for large kind of Fortune 500 companies. You know, started climbing up the typical career ladder in big companies and realized I really should know something about business. So I went back and got an MBA. And then that took my career in a whole different direction, more kind of into the management space. So eventually I was the CIO for a couple of large companies and always wanted to get back and run a business. So I finally got a chance to run a business and I became the CEO of a technology consulting company in location technology. And that was just fascinating. And then from there, that launched me into founding my own company in SaaS. After I sold that company, I started looking for something new to do. So that's a very fast turn through a lot of twists and changes of direction.
So you got done with your last business and you kind of had this open, the ability to do whatever you wanted to do. You have a background in tech, you have a background in SaaS specifically. Why go into e-commerce? As we'll talk about here, and as I mentioned in the intro, you know, you ended up buying an e-commerce business. What made you do that versus, you know, buying an existing small SaaS business or doing, you know, any other, the other, you know, you had wide open choices. What led you to e-com?
Yeah, it's a good question. So just to back that up a little bit more to tell the story. So the SaaS company we founded was in indoor location technology. So basically kind of giving a GPS type signal inside a building. Massive applications for it, really cutting edge technology, very cool stuff. I sold that business and had to work for the acquiring company for several years as part of the deal. And before that, I had been the CEO of a tech company for about 8 years, and it was a high growth company. So when I came out of that time period, about that 11 or 12 year window, you know, frankly, my tongue was hanging out a little bit, a little tired from being in the fast lane for that long. And so first I took 6 months and just recharged, right? And did a little reflection on what I wanted to do. And, you know, I was at a stage of life where I wasn't ready to hang up my things by any means and wanted to do something. But having been in tech and high tech, specifically in SaaS, you know, it's a very dynamic, aggressive industry, and you're constantly looking over your shoulder. I mean, you can have the greatest mousetrap and somebody can, you know, change the world very quickly. And so the odds, you know, the odds are long. If you want to start, I'll say the first decision really was build versus buy. And when I love building and starting something, but while the returns can be great if you make it, the odds can be long. And I had, you know, I'd gone through the full cycle of fundraising and knew that very few companies actually really kind of quote unquote make it. And so I didn't want to play the lottery again after having been fortunate and successful once. So I fell into build, and also say that, you know, I had the chance to work for a few companies and just kind of go and run some other companies. But after you've been your own boss, you realize it's really hard to go work for somebody else. So ultimately, kind of got into the decision that, you know what, I want to buy something. And then from there, it started saying, well, what do you want to buy? If you want an existing business to cut down kind of the risk profile, what's going to be your criteria? How are you going to go about it? What are you really looking for? And that started really a long-term process in of itself.
And so you shared a really great post in the forums. I think it maybe was your case study when you came in about your criteria for looking for a business. And I'm going to just go through them here and name them off. And if you could dive in and give a little bit of details behind them, that'd be great. First one was performance. So what were you looking for on the performance side of the business?
Yeah, so performance, what I was looking at was what I call a demonstrated product market fit. I'd done product management in my career, and you know, there's lots of great products out there, but if they never get traction for some reason, then you're really kind of going against the stream. And there's a ton, especially in e-commerce, there's a ton of, say, 2 or 3 year old businesses that have been started up. They, you know, they took off really great for a year. Maybe they're on a little bit of a downturn and the owner decided to kind of sell it and flip it. And that's not what I wanted. What I wanted was something that was really proven that there was a marketplace for the products and it had some staying power. So performance for me was at least a 5 year, preferably a 10 year track record of, you know, at least steady, preferably strong kind of growth over that time period. And by using that, you know, you can ensure that there's a market, there's people that want to spend money on whatever particular products, and, you know, that was a little lower risk approach. And that was just a personal choice based on kind of my stage in life and what I wanted to invest in and what kind of return I expected to see.
Second one you had was controlled customers, and this one is pretty self-explanatory. You just didn't want to, you wanted a business that, a .com that got most of their business from their own channels, or at least non-Amazon channels, it sounded like, and just from a risk profile, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I'm not anti-Amazon. I think Amazon's done a lot of things and obviously created tons of business opportunities for small sellers. But, you know, it's well known that you don't really control the customer experience. And I thought to do the kind of business that I wanted to do, I wanted to have more control over the customer experience and not really be at the mercy of somebody else. So I wanted a business that at least the majority, more than 50% of its sales came through its own website channel. It was okay to have an Amazon store and have some percentage or through some other platform or other sales channel, but I wanted at least 50% of the sales coming through its own store. So that could really control the full experience.
And third one was you wanted a team in place, an existing management team that you could step in and work on strategy and things like that. And I guess I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit. Obviously, that was something that you were looking for that you found. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also maybe if that actually worked out, how much of the management team, and I think it's been a little more a year-ish since you bought it, was that management team a good fit when you came in? And were you able to leave most of them in place or did you have to make some changes there?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the thinking was that, you know, I was at the stage in my life where I wanted to spend my time doing the things I wanted to do. And for me, you know, it's kind of about strategy and kind of things that really move the needle. So I wanted a team in place that really ran the day-to-day. You know, most of us are familiar with that concept of working in the business or working on the business, and I really wanted to work on the business. So that meant that there had to be subject experts or people that could kind of take care of the day-to-day. As I got into it, that's hard to find, especially in small to mid-sized tech firms and e-com firms. You know, they're typically founder run and they're wearing 100 different hats. And if they move on with the business, you can't always find a management team. So the company that I ended up buying did have three key managers in place, one that ran operations, one that ran marketing, and one that ran merchandising and product management. So it checked that box for me. And you're right, it's been about 14 months now. It turns out that only one of those three are still in place, but not because I had to make changes. They were very good managers. One of the things I've learned in retail, especially in fashion and beauty retail, is turnover rates high. People move on very quickly. And each of those two people ended up getting opportunities that they were really excited about. So they've moved on. So I've had to backfill and kind of do some restructuring along the way. But I think the idea was right, at least for what I was looking for in a business.
Going back, thinking about that, would you weight that as heavily given you've had the turnover? Or would you think, knowing what you know now, if you were looking back at all those other businesses, do you think you maybe would have considered some other companies that had a lot of, you know, maybe all of these criteria, but they didn't have a team in place?
No, actually, so I'll back up and say, I think you asked a little bit about any kind of frameworks or management philosophies. You know, a very common one that people use is people, process, technology, this idea that there's three legs and you kind of work all three of those legs to have a successful business. And I think what I've learned in there's a difference, I think, in a lot of e-commerce companies versus maybe more quote unquote traditional businesses, where in e-com, so many people focus on the technology leg. There's so much tech out there, so many apps, so many next kind of shiny things that technology gets like all the attention on that triangle, maybe process a little bit as people start to scale. And people sometimes are a little underinvested or not as focused on it, importantly. Whereas in many businesses and corporations, people might be a little bit more heavy than the process and technology. You know, my fundamental belief is that it's still about people. The technology and processes make it scalable and easier to run, especially in a virtual world. But people are critical, and I wouldn't change my emphasis on having the right people in the business.
You mentioned something, I don't know if it was in the same case study you wrote here, maybe somewhere else, but you had this idea of, for all of your managers, you wanted to have one sentence that encapsulated everything, really what they were supposed to be focusing on in their overarching responsibility in their roles. And so that, you know, to just in one sentence, they could sum that all up in terms of what was important for them. And I thought that was really cool because it's, you think about a lot of times, I don't know if you're this way, but I feel like when I work with my team, oftentimes I can hand off too much stuff where I forget what I've handed to them. And then, you know, 3 months later, when we regroup, I realize, oh my goodness, this is what is really most important to me, but I've sabotaged your ability to do a good job because I've kind of snuck all these other little things in along the way. And so I loved how you did that because it's just a great way to be able to maintain a really high level focus on the most important things with a single sentence for each manager, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you read job descriptions, right? And there's 15 bullet points of what all the job entails. And business is crazy. Every day has got all sorts of new challenges and things to focus on. So not only does it create focus, if you can come up with a really tight single line sentence about kind of their mission or purpose of that role, not only does it create focus, as people are going about making daily decisions, they can try to put it in the context of that mission and purpose. And then it also creates alignment, right? So if you both agree on what that sentence statement is, then you've got alignment. And, you know, if you start getting diverged in what you're trying to accomplish, you can kind of get back and reground and say, is this still valid? Is this still what this role is all about? Or has it changed? Does it align with what you want to do? So it's just a really nice kind of central glue that holds a lot of things together.
I want to talk about growth opportunities. That was another one of your big criteria. And I'd love to hear how you evaluated this, because I've looked through a good number of prospectuses for businesses for sale or to invest in, and everyone, it seems like every prospectus always has a section on incredible growth opportunities. In fact, there's, you know, probably just waking up and, you know, showing up from a computer for an hour a day and you can double this business in your spare time, right? Like, and it's sometimes, obviously, you definitely have businesses who have a lot of potential there. Some of them are grossly oversold. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference without doing a lot of due diligence and diving in. So I'd love to hear you talk about that, not even just from the perspective of criteria for looking for a business, but how you evaluated if you thought they were legitimate versus just, you know, hot air.
And it's not easy. You're right. The prospectuses make every business sound like there's tremendous upside. And, you know, you sit there and say, if there's all that upside, why aren't you going and doing it and taking care of it yourself? You know, I think there's a kind of a practical sniff test that you first apply and say, hey, with what you know about the industry and e-com and so on, you just kind of say, is this legitimate or not? But, you know, a simple framework that I've used past life helped a little bit. And it basically answers three questions. And the questions are a little bit hard to answer when you're on the outside looking in because you don't have all of the information in detail. You try to maybe do it during the due diligence process. The three questions basically say, can we, should we, and will we? So three simple questions. Can we basically kind of says whatever this opportunity is, you know, it's there, but do we really have the ability, the resources, the skills, the capabilities, whatever it might take to actually pursue the opportunity? If the answer is a yes, should we, then kind of gets into, well, what are all the implications, pros and cons? Does it create new risk for us? Is it a distraction? You know, what happens if we try to do it? And then will we kind of become the gut check? And it's mostly about organizational capacity because there's lots of opportunities, but you can't chase everything. So then the will we says, do we have the capacity to take it on? And what I've found is kind of going through those three simple questions helps you at least assess and say, yeah, I buy into that. That's a growth opportunity, or maybe it's out there, but we're really not going to probably pursue it and run with it.
Hey guys, Andrew here with a quick little aside. If you're enjoying this discussion and you're listening to Lee and you're thinking, man, this guy sounds kind of sharp, went out, made a list, systematically searched for it, bought this company and is growing it in a really smart, intentional way, you really need to join us inside the e-commerce fuel private community because, as I mentioned earlier, Lee is a member and it's a group of people with very similar mindsets doing similar things, buying, running, and growing seven-figure plus e-commerce businesses. Everyone inside is vetted. They're actually doing this stuff. And it's a group of people that you can learn from, connect with, and really just use as a community and a group of peers to help grow your business as well as develop deep friendships. So if that sounds interesting to you, if you want to connect with that community, it's incredibly active. I think 4,000 or 5,000 comments alone. We have a review directory of over 10,000 reviews of service providers, software, ERPs, shipping solutions, all from our members, non-biased, non-affiliate driven. If any of this sounds interesting, come check us out. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. All right, back to my discussion with Lee. How important was it for you guys on the repeat purchase side? I feel like that is such a huge thing to consider, especially now where just advertising is more expensive. It's harder to get in front of people. How much of an important factor was that? Because I know for your business, it has a decent repeat purchase rate, I believe. Was that like an absolute must-have when you were looking?
It wasn't part of my criteria because, you know, every business is a little bit different in terms of their customer base and so on. We do have we're blessed with a high repeat business rate. We serve really two core segments or personas. The first one are professional makeup artists, so people that are working in salons, they're independent makeup artists, or working on stage and theater and other media. The other are what we would call a prosumer, people that are interested in professional level products and professional techniques, you know, not maybe products that you would buy at your local department store or drugstore. For both of those, once they find a product and learn how to use it, then they become very loyal. And so we do cultivate that, and it's an important part of our business model, but it wasn't part of my criteria because, you know, every e-commerce business is a little different in terms of, I guess, what I'd call their economic engine. You know, there's that formula, right, of traffic times conversion rate times repeat rate times basket, number of items in your basket equals revenue. And, you know, every business is a little different in terms of which one of those levers you can push more significantly.
So you've got all these criteria, you've looked at all these. How many businesses did you ultimately look at before you settled on Camera Ready Cosmetics?
A lot. I think well over 100, which sounds like a big job, but you know, there's a lot of brokers out there for online businesses. And once you get on the subscription list for all the different brokerages out there, you're getting 3, 4, 5 deals a day hitting your inbox. And so for me, the first, I'd say, 3 months was just reading reviews and prospectuses and trying to form my thought process about what am I looking for? What do these things look like? What does quote unquote good look like to me? It's tempting, like the first one that comes by, to kind of jump and run after it, but I had a little bit of time. So I kind of took my time and just learned and immersed myself in the process. I did go after, in those first 3 months or so, I went after one or two businesses and was unsuccessful. And from that, the big lesson learned is when you do see something you want to go after, you typically have to go really fast. I was too slow. Because at the same time that I was looking for an online business, I was actually in a search for physical businesses. So I was looking at local businesses, and those move at a completely different pace than the online world. So it was quite strange. You know, I was looking at some of those businesses, and then when I saw one in the online world that I really liked, I started to go after it. I think I waited a week or 10 days or something, and it was too late.
So that's interesting. Why were you looking for to either do local or online, or were you going to do both of them? And regardless, what was it about a local brick and mortar business that appealed to you? Because I think a lot of people would probably be surprised by that.
Yeah, I was doing an either or. I was looking at the kind of local businesses that still fit some of the same criteria in terms of performance and kind of owning their customers and having some opportunities and a team in place. And, you know, there's some fantastic, tremendous local businesses, and they do have some advantages over online businesses in terms of how they can serve their customer market and their local community and so on. So I'm not by any means anti-brick and mortar. I was not looking for a brick and mortar retail, the type of physical businesses I was looking for. I mean, they ranged all over the place from dry cleaners to buildings products companies, just, you know, a wide variety, but I wasn't really looking for a retail brick and mortar. So it was kind of one or the other, and which one came along that I thought was the best investment first.
You made the bid on the business. I know you bid high, and this time around when you saw this, you know, camera ready, you bid aggressively, moved quickly, you got it, you closed through probably what could be another whole discussion about the closing process, and usually those have a bump or two in them. You take ownership of the business, and I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing you probably know very little about cosmetics coming into this.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I mean, we actually have a large number of male customers, but I was not one of them. Yeah, there were a couple challenges that went with that. One, and we could talk more about it, was just convincing. I did use some SBA financing to help in the acquisition, and convincing the SBA lender that a guy who knew nothing about cosmetics was a good horse to get on.
Well, just for people who don't know you as well, you love riding motorcycles, and I could just see you riding up on your bike to the SBA lender, hopping off and trying to sell them that you were going to go buy this business.
Yeah, they were kind of like, what? Why do we want to take a chance with you? But that's why, you know, having an existing team in place became an important part of the pitch.
Yeah. So what did that first, you know, 3 to 6 months look like? You know, you come in, you're still trying to, and this is the case for any business, even if you have subject area expertise in it, you're still walking into a lot of unknowns. So what was your approach that first 6 months when you came in?
Yeah. So, you know, tying back to kind of our earlier discussion where I said I've been with a lot of different companies, I've had the chance to enter a lot of organizations. Each one that I enter, I develop a 100-day plan and kind of say, what are the important I accomplish in these first 100 days? And in this case, a 100-day plan had a couple of different legs to it. One was get to know our people. We had about 20 employees. So that 100-day plan, including sitting down for long one-on-one sessions with every single employee to get to know them and their background and why they were here and what they liked and what they thought we could get better at. Another leg was getting to know our brand. So we are primarily a retailer. We represent about 140 different brands with over 13,000 active SKUs. We do have a private label brand and have some of our own products, but we're primarily a retailer. And so it was important I started to get to build some relationships with some of those brands. And really the biggest leg, as you kind of alluded to, was taking a crash course in makeup and cosmetics and learning, you know, the different categories of products and the different brands and what are their selling attributes. And We have some makeup artists on our team, and we had multiple sessions where we just went into the showroom all day long, and they taught me about makeup. I will never profess to be a makeup guru, but at least now I can tell the difference between our products.
Well, congrats on the business purchase, and it seems like obviously it's working out well for you. I'd love, before we kind of wrap up the discussion, to dive into a lightning round if you're game for it.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Feel free to answer just rapid fire, quick shot answers. Favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
I mentioned the size of our SKU list and purchasing is a big challenge. So we recently implemented a software product called Inventory Planner, and it's really helped our purchasing significantly. It's tailor-made. Every vendor has different lead times and assortments and buy quantities, and Inventory Planner has helped us become much better at buying inventory.
Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Boy, this is one you want to throw under the bus, somebody. Probably Seller Central. I'll go with one that everybody probably jumps on. But Seller Central is important, but boy, it's not the easiest product to learn and use.
Yeah, they didn't get to where they are in their stock price by having beautiful back-end software, that's for sure. What's been the most effective marketing strategy for you in the last 6 months?
You know, this is really simple. It's going to sound maybe basic, but we knew, especially with the pandemic going on, that people were missing a sense of community and being plugged in when they were staying at home. So we put together a very simple thank you email after every purchase. It goes out in a couple of days after. And it doesn't try to do any upselling or cross-selling. All it does is say, thank you. We know these are difficult times and we appreciate having a chance to serve you. If there's anything we can do for you, just let us know. And the response has been amazing. People like are shocked to get thank you notes from people. So that's been a very powerful, simple technique.
And like I alluded to earlier, you love getting out on the bike, the motorcycle. Where's your favorite place to ride in the U.S.? Or I guess it could be anywhere.
Well, that's a tough one, obviously. I mean, any time on a motorcycle is a good time, except when it's 104 degrees in Texas. I'm going to give you two answers, two different kinds of rides. One is where you just loving the scenery and looking around and it's blowing you away. For that one, when you head out of Moab, Utah, and I think it's about 128, heading east along the river, it's incredible scenery with, you know, sheer mountain cliffs on each side of you, and it's just gorgeous. The other kind of riding is, you know, all motorcycle people like twists and turns and hills and so on. And there's a route from Cimarron, New Mexico to Taos, New Mexico, across a couple of mountain passes. I think it's Route 64. And that's just a thrilling, fun ride with scenery and more turns than you could ever want.
You mentioned you have an insane number of SKUs. What's your favorite product that you sell and offer? And we'll link up to it in the show notes.
Can I give you a couple?
Sure.
Okay. We've got so many, and I had to ask a couple people and think about it. In today's world, everybody's wearing a mask, so the eyes are important. So we run we carry a brand called Viseart, and they have an eye palette called Paris Edit that is just a beautiful assortment of colors. It's very sophisticated. It's got some nice matte and shimmer sheens, so a really popular and favorite product. We also have a product from a brand called Danessa Myricks. It's a balm, kind of a skin balm called Dew Wet Highlighter. And people use it either with makeup or without makeup. It's very lightweight, very hydrating, gives people a nice glow. Skincare is kind of where it's at right now. So those are two really nice products.
What's the last thing you apologized for that you're willing to talk about?
Well, I play a lot of tennis, and yesterday I hit my doubles partner in the back of the head with a ground stroke. So I had to apologize for that. I think maybe on a bigger scale in business, back at the start of the pandemic, we had a kind of a small promotion set up where it was like $20 off a $100 purchase or something like that. And we sent out the email blast, and we were maybe 4 or 5 days into the pandemic. And at that time, you know, everybody was kind of panicking and feeling fear about their environment, their economic conditions and so on. And we actually got some pretty bad backlash from people saying, hey, how dare you give us an offer that's just so bad? We're struggling and really out here, you know, $20 off, really. And so we apologized. We sent a follow-up note and apologized and just said, you know, we didn't think through this and, you know, tried to be authentic about it. I think that's where the key is. We were just humble and authentic and said we were trying to just provide some relief to some people, but I don't think we hit the mark right and got a great response from that. So sometimes just putting your hat in hand is the best thing.
And then finally, who's the most interesting person you've met as a part of being inside the e-commerce field private community?
Well, the whole community is full of interesting people. I met one of our members, Ben Katzman. Ben was just fantastic to me. He sells a really cool bracelet made by artisans in Bali. And he kind of just told me a story about seeing these bracelets and realizing it was a business opportunity. And I loved his story of how he kind of did it and it made a big difference to his craftsmen. And he's kind of got this cool vibe about how he lives life and so on. So I really enjoyed getting to meet Ben.
Yeah, Ben's a great guy. Well, Lee, thank you. Super cool hearing how you've thought about this process, being able to, you know, the pivot you made in life to into e-commerce. Yeah, if you haven't checked out the site, camerareadycosmetics.com, you can see the entire business that we've talked about. You know, spent the last half hour talking about. So thanks for being willing to come on and share that process. Thanks for being a part of the community, like I said earlier, and everything you've contributed. You've been tremendous. Really appreciate your time here and in the forum, sir.
Absolutely. Appreciate having a chance to tell the story.
That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the eCommerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.